Walker on McGee with four. Kemba Walker. Step back. Walker. Cardiac Kemba does it again. UConn wins at the buzzer.
Oh! My goodness! Sorrenti hit that one from the parking lot.
3 seconds at midcourt. Jenkins gives it to Jenkins.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Full Court Fridays. This is your host Kyle, along with my boy Jefferson.
What's up everybody?
And it's been a while, it's been probably
6 weeks. Yeah, yeah. A nice 6 week break, but we're back at it.
Yep, we head off from school for a couple weeks, nice winter break, but Jeff's back now. And we're here to talk some basketball, so let's get right into it. What's on the agenda today, Jeff?
So, we have a big weekend coming up, as everybody knows, the big matchup. Arguably, it could be the game of the year. We got Kentucky and Kansas at Rupp Arena. We're going to talk about that. But before that, this was a pretty big week in terms of losses in college basketball. Duke, Villanova, and Kentucky all lost. So, we're going to talk about some of the bigger losses this week. Kansas lost 2 to West Virginia. So we're going to talk about those losses from earlier in the week. We're going to start with Duke and NC State. I saw the tail end of that game, and I think a lot of the problems that Duke had that they showed in that game are problems that are going to be reoccurring and things they haven't addressed for the beginning of the season. Number one, this team has no identity at all in terms of complementing each other. Number two, they have no point guard. And three, Jason Tatum is probably the biggest ball hog I've ever seen in my life. Like, watching that game just in the last 10 minutes of the second half, if Jason Tatum had converted on a lot of the six layups he missed, Duke would have won the game. But I think the problem with Jason Tatum and Duke's offense is he's a really big ball stopper, and Duke relies on moving the ball and just motion a lot. And so he doesn't necessarily fit in with them well at all. And then the second problem is they have no point guard, nobody who can be reliable enough to run their offense and run sets and set things up. But that's one of the bigger problems. Then also, I know, Kyle, you were really high on Harry Giles to start the year out, but I think it's safe to say at this point he hasn't really been living up to the hype.
I don't think Duke in general has been living up to the hype at all. I don't know how much of that can be attributed to Coach K missing a few weeks because of his back surgery, but right now, what are they ranked? I know they're ranked in the teens.
They were 18th on in this week, but I think they'll be out of the top 25 by Monday, to be honest with you.
And that's kind of crazy considering, you know, they were pretty much the consensus, you know, number one pick preseason to win the championship. So to see how far they've fallen, even without like Harry Giles for the beginning of the year, like you did not expect a Duke team, especially under Krzyzewski, to fall so hard. I think a lot of it was just preseason hype. And
I agree with you there. Like that freshman class coming in had lofty expectations with Frank Jackson. He's been, I wouldn't call him steady, but he's been playing hard for them at least. Jason Tatum, like I said, he doesn't really fit into the offense, but the two people who have been most disappointed, I think, are Harry Giles and Marcus Bolden, just because there was so much hype going into the summer about Marcus Bolden. Oh, what's he going to do? Is he going to go to Kentucky? Is he going to go to Duke? Is he going to do this? Is he going to do that? And when you look at him, he looks kind of lost. He's a liability on defense, just in the same sense that Harry Giles is, that they can get attacked in the pick and rolls, and teams are targeting them. They want them to switch onto the ball because they're not fleet of foot, and they can't really guard the ball in terms of hedging and switching out. So that's something that's going to be a problem for Duke, too. I think Dennis Smith, though, did you see any of that game? He was unreal.
He dropped 32 points.
And 6 assists, and he could have had more. But I think that puts him on, honestly, that game, that performance he had, I think he should hop right back in the conversation for the number one overall pick in the draft looking forward to this summer. I think if you had to decide between him, Lonzo Ball, Markel Fultz, who's the best point guard in college basketball, even throw in De'Aaron Fox in that mix, that'd be a hard question to answer. But I think Dennis Smith has to be right up there in terms of being considered for that spot, because I think he's in a similar boat to Markel Fultz where he doesn't necessarily have the team around him. He's not in a huge – well, he's in a bigger market just because he's in Triangle of Fire, the ACC, on Tobacco Road, but he doesn't have the team around him to kind of be in the national conversation all the time. But as an individual, he's just as good as anybody out there.
Yeah, hands down, Dennis Smith is the heart and soul of that NC State team. He went 10 for 18 from the field, 4 for 6 for 3, and just dropping 32 points when everybody on Duke was held under 20.
Yeah, in Cameron, too. He's at Cameron.
In Cameron. And Luke Kennard was the only person to break 20, and he got 20 exactly. But that's just insane that Dennis Smith could carry a team like that. Speaking of Luke Kennard dropping 20, he came off the bench. I don't know. How do you feel about that? I feel like he's probably the most consistent player.
He should
at this
be.
Point.
I think if anybody, Grayson should be. Grayson and Jason Tatum should come off the bench.
Grayson is coming off the bench.
I think it should be Jason Tatum, though, just because in the second unit he could be more of who he is, which is an isolation ball stopper, island ball type of scorer. But in the starting lineup, when they have that much firepower and that many shooters, I don't think he's necessarily the best fit because, like I said in the beginning of the podcast, I'm going to say again, he stops the ball and he takes a long time to make reads, where he lets the defense, if they're out of position, him taking all that time to make a read and stopping the ball lets them reset and get back into their assignments. I think they'd be better off to have Luke in the starting lineup for sure, and then Frank Jackson, just because he's better on the defensive end in terms of covering point guards. But that's been the big issue about Duke coming into the season. That was a big question. Do they have a point guard? And I think that's the issue with them right now. It's going to be an issue with them come March. I can't see them, honestly, with how they're playing right now. And Amir Jefferson's foot, I don't know what's going on there, but he's been questionable with that. So I can't see them getting past the Sweet 16. And that's assuming they end up in a favorable side of the bracket, which is easy for them. But I wouldn't be surprised if Duke doesn't make it to the second weekend.
And speaking of Duke also, especially Grayson Allen, that, you know, I don't have too many nice things to say about Grayson Allen, but there's been a lot of controversy surrounding him recently, a lot of tripping incidents.
Do you think that's starting to take a toll on them as a team mentally?
I don't think a team as a whole. I think it's definitely, obviously, it's taking a toll on Grayson. You know, he keeps acting out, and it's being reflected in his play. He only shot 4 for 13 from the field the other day, coming off the bench, and only got 26 minutes. So, I mean, he's obviously, something's not right with him right now mentally. I feel like there's some sort of block that's keeping him from reaching his full potential. But there's got to be some sort of method for why he keeps doing this. Like, I think it was the NC State game where he was walking back to the bench and he just, like, walked right through the NC State bench.
Yeah, that was the end of the game. He got tangled up with their players.
And, like, he always tries to, like, play the victim, but, like, he's always the one starting all this stuff.
Definitely. No, I'm with you 100% there. I don't think, especially, he's probably going to end up in the NBA, and I don't think any of that's going to fly when he's going up against grown men with families and just the level of pride that they play the game with. I think it's going to be a big issue for him.
You really think he's going to make it to the NBA the way he's been playing this season?
He'll make it to the NBA eventually, just because of the way the game is going, where it's so trendy nowadays to have a 3-and-D type of player on the roster. And he'll probably go late to a contender where it'd be easier for him to fill that type of role. So I think he'll get there, but you want to wrap up that game, talk about Kentucky and Tennessee?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I got to say on Duke. Good. I'm glad that Duke's failing. That's all I can say.
All right, I think a lot of people are glad Duke's not having a good year. But I think Kentucky, this loss to Tennessee, it was a really competitive game. But I think the loss was really good for them, just because I think at this point, safe to say, in the SEC, they're going to run the table. And I think a lot of that success could, with dealing with freshmen who are 19, 20 years old, whatever, could get to their head. Like I said, it wasn't necessarily a bad loss. They didn't play poorly. It was only by 2 points. Malik Monk was unreal again.
And it was at Tennessee. Unlike the Duke game that was at Cameron, this was at Tennessee.
Yeah, it was at Rocky Top. But Malik Monk had a really good game, like I was saying. I think this could have been a trap game for them, if anything, because this was their only game of the week besides the Kansas game, which I think is going to have everybody's attention starting tomorrow. But like I said, I think the loss could almost be beneficial for Kentucky in the sense that it's going to help them refocus and humble them a little bit more going forward, which is nice. But one thing I realized about Kentucky as kind of a trend is when they go into the 80s and 90s and get into these shootouts, their defense is suspect at best. Like if you look at the UCLA game, they lost that. That game was in the 90s. The North Carolina game, they only won because Malik Monk had 47 points. So I think when Kentucky, when they play against a team with a lot of firepower and people who can put the ball in the hoop consistently and can test that defense, I think they have issues. Another thing, their rim protection is kind of suspect at best, because when Bam goes out of the game, Isaiah Humphries, whatever his name is, he's not as mobile or as athletic and explosive, so teams are going to be able to go downhill on them. So I think this game for Kentucky was a good loss in the sense that we'll refocus them, but it's also same way to Duke, it's a bad loss because it exposed a lot of their flaws that won't necessarily go away with time, the flaws that are here to stay and flaws that can come back to bite them in March.
Yeah, well, like we said, Kentucky did not play a bad game by any sense of the word. four of the starting five players were in double-digit scoring. The only person that seemed like they failed to show up was Wendy Gabriel.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's wrong. Wendy Gabriel, I feel like he's just in the starting lineup because he's the less of two evils between him and Derek Willis. Like, he gives you a lot more on defense, but I'm kind of surprised, almost disappointed with just – he was really skilled in high school, and that's what he was known for, his versatility. But I feel like this season is not really – he hasn't really shown anything for it just because he's shooting, like, under 30%. I think around 20% from the three-point line. He's just decision-making and suspect at times.
He went 0 for 3 from the three-point line.
Yeah, he can't – he's not really that great of a shooter, but
– he only went 1 for 6 from the field in general. He only scored 2 points. But like you said, Willis – also got 22 minutes, and he only dropped 4.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah, I think just what I was saying, William, in terms of being a wing defender and being able to defend the post, he gives you more because he's more athletic, he's younger, he's lankier, but he has been disappointing on offense. I'm wondering whether or not the signing of Hamidou Diallo maybe was bad luck for Kentucky.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We're going to have to talk about that later.
Yeah, we could talk about Hamidou later, but... I don't know. Kentucky has not really looked that great since Hamidou's been on the squad, so maybe UConn dodged a bullet there, maybe not.
I don't really think Hamidou has much to do with any of it. I think Kentucky's, like you said, their flaws are just starting to be exposed. But I don't know. Only time will tell. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – we're going to talk about this in a little while, but that matchup with Kansas this week is going to be serious, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other big loss this week
– was Kansas.
Kansas and West Virginia. I think – Kansas, I'm not really worried about this loss necessarily because Kansas always plays bad when they go into Morgantown. They usually get beat. Like it's been a trend.
Yeah, this was definitely the least surprising of the losses.
The other thing, it was a really competitive game until Josh Jackson fouled out. I think it was only a 6 or 8 point game, and then he fouled out, and that's when West Virginia kind of blew the game open late. But for the most part, it was contested. I think Kansas was only down by 2 or 4 at halftime. So it was tight the whole way through. But similar to Duke and Kentucky, one of Kansas's big issues that's not going to resolve itself anytime soon was exposed, and that's they don't really have that much depth. Just because I think people almost in a sports sense, they kind of, in basketball at least, they don't really understand the full meaning of depth. Depth doesn't mean just, oh, if somebody gets hurt, somebody can step up. It's also Josh Jackson fouled out of that game. And when you're in the tournament, it's one game, you have one bad performance, you're going home. And I think him fouling out and nobody being able to step up kind of show that they lack depth in the sense that they're over-reliant on three people, which is Devontae Graham, Frank Mason, and Josh Jackson. And so if one of them is not playing well, hurt, or in foul trouble, I think you need guys like Gerald Vick and people like that to step up and help them out a little bit. But what did you think of that game, Kyle?
I definitely agree that once Josh Jackson fouled out, like that was the end of it for Kansas. Like I said, I wasn't really surprised. I don't think they've won in Morgantown in the last 4 years or something like that.
They had not been having much success in West Virginia.
They've had a lot of trouble in West Virginia, which, I don't know. If I had to choose another team to support besides UConn, it'd definitely be West Virginia. I just love Bob Huggins as a coach and just
that
program in general. I just really like West Virginia. There's something about it. So I always like when they win, especially over a team like Kansas. But, yeah, Frank Mason didn't have necessarily a bad game, but he didn't show up or show the promise that he had been showing earlier in the season. He went 6 for 16 from the field, 3 for 7 from 3, so only scoring 15. Which, that was the thing. Kansas, like, their scoring was definitely, like, evenly distributed throughout the starting five, but their bench was really lacking. They only scored 7 points from their bench as opposed to West Virginia, who scored 23 off their bench.
And the other thing about this Kentucky game, they're going to be on the road, so they're going to need that bench to show up huge, but... And watching that game, it was really encouraging with how Josh Jackson played. To be honest with you, he looked like a young Tracy McGrady with those passes he was making, that frame. That skinny 6'8", around 200 pounds, can jump out the gym type of frame. But I think the most encouraging sign for him wasn't his passing necessarily. It was just he was shooting the three ball well. I think he had 3 or 4 threes. He had 22 points. But his shot was falling, which is encouraging going forward. But I think he's going to be the X factor. I guess we should just hop into the Kansas-Kentucky game now because that was up next anyway. I think Josh Jackson is going to be the X factor against Kentucky on Saturday because Kentucky doesn't necessarily have a small forward. Like, they play three guards, and Winnie and Gabriel always guards up big. So I think he's going to get either Malik Monk or Isaiah Briscoe on him, and he's going to have advantages in pretty much everything, height, wingspan, athleticism. So I think they're going to rely on him heavy. And then Devontae Graham and Frank Mason versus De'Aaron Fox and whoever doesn't guard Josh Jackson is going to be a good matchup too. I think it'll be interesting too because both the teams are coming off losses like we talked about, Kyle. And then They have stylistically they're very similar, and that they don't really have a true big guy. Bam's not really a true big guy in my opinion because he's not reliable to go get buckets in terms of you can just feed him the post consistently. He has a nice drop step, but that's about it. And I think the X factor for Kansas is going to be LeGerald Vick. Like I said, like we talked about, they need their bench to step up more in the game, especially they're on the road. It's going to be high, it's going to be a hostile environment. It's going to be very competitive. And what do you think? What do you got going on for that game, Kyle?
Well, just for starters, I would definitely say I got Kentucky coming away with it. It's really hard to beat Kentucky and Rupp, regardless of who your team is.
See, I'm not with you there. I got Kansas. I think they're going to pull this game out.
All right.
I think it just favors them. Like similarly, the teams are similar stylistically, but the thing that Kansas has is experience. They're older, and I don't think Kentucky's going to have an answer for Josh Jackson, and he's going to come in. He's going to show – Josh Jackson's a dog. He's a killer. He's going to show, and he's going to be locked in and ready to ball out against Kansas – I mean, against Kentucky, excuse me. So I'm picking Kansas, but I think it's going to be really tight. It could come down to the last possession. But what else do you got going on in that game?
I definitely agree that I feel like Kansas's senior players or older guys at least are going to be the deciding factor in this game. You know, they got guys like Frank Mason who've been around. They know the game. Whereas Kentucky's basically held back by Calipari's one-and-done philosophy.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. It's definitely going to be a great matchup, but I still have Kentucky coming away with the win.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – one thing that's going to make this game really exciting is just going to be a lot of transition buckets. It's going to be up and down, which kind of – favors Josh Jackson in Kansas in a sense because they have two guards that can push the break and run whenever, and then have Josh Jackson who's going to be sprinting the lane. So that favors them also slightly because Kentucky's not too shabby in transition either. But I think at the end of the day, I think Kansas is going to win. And the other thing, John Calipari, as good as a I guess player developer is the right word. As good as a player developer as he is, he's not necessarily the best at making adjustments. And I think Bill Self is one of the best in the business, hands down, at making adjustments and coming out different in the second half. So I think John Calipari will get out-coached, and that's one thing to keep an eye on, too, for this matchup is the coaching matchup because it's going to be a tight game in terms of their personnel are very similar. But it's going to be a shootout regardless. It's really I've been looking forward to it all week. I'm excited for tomorrow. And then the other big matchup we have going on is University of Virginia is playing Villanova in Philadelphia on Sunday at 1 o'clock. And, Kyle, I know you want to talk about Nova this week. They had a loss to Marquette. What do you think about that?
It was lost at Marquette, so I mean, even though it is, yeah, it's number one Villanova, like I wouldn't really hold it against them that much. Who did Marquette beat last week? They beat another really big team.
I think it might have been Creighton.
Yeah, it was Creighton. Yeah, that's right.
I agree with you in that. I wouldn't really get too excited about Marquette because Creighton, their best player, Maurice Watson, just tore his ACL. So he wasn't even playing that game, but Creighton was still ranked because their record was still good. They hadn't been without him for that long, but I agree with you that it's not really a huge deal that Villanova lost.
Because Marquette's by no means a terrible team.
I was looking at Joe Lenardi's bracket. He has them in at like a 5 or a 12 seed, I forget, but they're in the tournament right now.
It's quite the jump, 5 to a 12 seed. It's more likely a 12 seed. They're not ranked. They might be ranked at
5-12 matchup. Let's talk about
all right,
that.
All right.
5-12 matchup.
I don't know. It's. Where do you see Marquette making the tournament? Do you?
I think they could make it because they have enough good wins.
That Creighton and that Nova win is going to be key.
Steve Wojciechowski has done a good job when he's been there. They like to shoot the ball a lot. And one player on the team that I'm actually a fan of, I've been a fan of him since he was in high school. They played at Modern Day, is Caden Reinhart. He's on the team as a grad transfer right now. He graduated from USC in May, and so he's playing with them. I think he's going to be good for them in terms of he's kind of a combo guard. He could score the ball and he could run offense and set up sets too. So I think they'll be all right. I don't know if they're going to make any noise in the tournament, but I think they're definitely – I feel confident with them getting there.
But how would you feel about them winning the Big East tournament? You think that's a
honestly, realistic it's possible possibility? Because one thing I want to say about Villanova is they have a lot of problems with teams who – when they get into games that are in the 70s and high 60s, they have problems. Like when they got beat by Butler, that was a low-scoring game. They beat Notre Dame, but that was because Josh Hart went off, but it was still a competitive, low-scoring game, kind of grinded-out game. And that's why I don't think they'll be able to beat Virginia this weekend because Virginia's hot right now. They just beat Notre Dame. They won 5 straight, and they're kind of finding their stride. Ondris Perantis has been great for them.
And I think they didn't just beat Notre Dame. They absolutely wrecked.
They wrecked Notre Dame in South Bend. So I think that's going to be kind of the reason why they'll lose, why they'll beat Villanova, excuse me. I also think just stylistically they like to play slow and grind the game out, which favors them against Nova. And what was my last point is just UVA is very physical, and I think they have enough guard play to kind of match up with Nova in the sense that Dante, DiVincenzo, and those guys are solid, but in a high-level game versus high-level team, I wouldn't necessarily put my eggs in their basket. But I think London Perantes and Jalen Brunson is going to be a really good matchup at the point. I think for Virginia, Kyle Guy is the X factor because if they want to beat Nova, Nova can get hot whenever. They're going to have to play from behind. And Kyle Guy is the one person they have on the roster who I trust to consistently take and make shots and just fill it up from anywhere. So it's at Wells Fargo Center, which also favors Nova. But I think University of Virginia is hot right now. They won 5 or 6 in a row, and they just had that big win over Notre Dame. So I think they're going to upset Nova in Philly.
I don't see them upsetting Nova in Philly just because, you know, Nova's not a bad team, obviously. They're still going to be probably top 5 consensus ranked.
Yeah.
But actually, speaking of the rankings, I want to touch on this real quick. I don't think it's really any doubt now that Gonzaga is going to be the number one ranked team in the country.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to win out at regular season because when they played St. Mary's, we were on winter break, but it wasn't a competitive game at all. And now they're just playing West Coast Conference team. So I think they're going to win out and be similar to Wichita State from a few years ago where they just went out in a mid-major conference. But this team is going to be legit in March. I mean, Nigel Williams-Goss, like a lot of people forget about him because he was at Washington. He's playing well. And he transferred because he wanted to be part of a winning program, which is fine. But people forget, when he was in eighth grade, he was the best eighth grader in the country, and he's a McDonald's All-American. Like, this kid can ball. And they have a lot of talent on the team. Zach Collins, another guy, Jonathan Williams III. So they have all these good players. They have a lot of experience. They're older. And I don't think any team is going to want to see them when the tournament rolls around. What do you think about the Bulldogs, Kyle?
I definitely agree. It's a huge possibility, and actually more than a likelihood than a possibility at this point that they win out the regular season. West Coast Conference isn't competitive at all, I don't think.
Yeah, the biggest competition is St. Mary's, but they whack St. Mary's.
Is St. Mary's even ranked anymore?
I think they're 23rd, but
they dropped a lot.
They're trending down.
But yeah, there's I don't know. It's definitely seeming like you said, that comparison to that Wichita State team a few years back. Only thing is, I think they're going to make a little more noise in the tournament than Wichita State team. I agree with you.
You never know with how these regions work out and how the committee seeds teams because they could be the number one overall seed in the most competitive region. But I think I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the Elite Eight, Final Four, depending on, again, how matchups go.
Gonzaga ever made it to the Final Four?
I don't think they have. They're definitely not under Mark Few, but I'm not sure about all time.
I'd love to see them make a Final Four. I'd like to see them win a national championship.
I think that would be good for college basketball.
Yeah, I'm sick of seeing Mark Few deserves it. Yeah, I'm just sick of seeing the same teams win year in, year out, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
The Dukes, the Kentuckys, the North Carolinas.
That's one good thing about this season in particular. There's a lot of, just team-wise, there's a lot of parity, and anybody can beat anybody. Just look at the ACC, like NC State just beat Duke and Cameron Indoor, and then Virginia just waxed Notre Dame at Purcell Pavilion on a Tuesday. Like, that's where the ACC is always my favorite league because it's so deep and there's a lot of parity.
That we were talking about this, I remember, on the first podcast. How many teams do you see from the ACC getting into the tournament at this point? Because they're just beating the hell out of each other right now.
I know we both agreed on 10 before winter break, but I don't know about teams like Clemson and NC State now because there's a lot of, like, NC State's probably like 14-7 right now. There's a lot of teams like that in the country, but the one advantage that the ACC teams have against other teams in the country is every time you step on the court, now this conference play has a chance to boost your RPI and your resume because of how deep of a league it is. I'm hesitant, but I think Florida State could go to the Final Four. I say that very hesitantly. I think North Carolina.
Did you have them in your initial Final Four pick?
Florida State? No.
No. I don't remember who I had in my Final Four.
I definitely didn't have Florida State, though. They go really deep, and they're surprising, but North Carolina has Theo Pinson back now. They're kind of playing. They're playing well. They got their big three juniors: him, Joel Berry, and Justin Jackson. So I think they'll be good. That's the smart money, I think, to win the ACC as the Tar Heels. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely not gonna be Duke at this point.
Yeah,
I feel like Duke's out of the running.
I would not bet my house on Duke. But to wrap up, I know this is kind of old news at this point, but let's talk about Hamidou Diallo and him committing to Kentucky.
All right. Well, I think at this point in the podcast, it's no secret that me and Jeff are UConn fans.
I'm not. Kyle is.
Jeff likes to pretend he's not when we lose. but deep down inside, he's a diehard Husky fan. But yeah, it's honestly just a kick in the balls, the fact that we lost him to Kentucky, especially since I feel like going into the season, UConn was so highly touted to get him. And honestly, in my opinion, they would have gotten him if they hadn't had the season they're having so far.
Yeah.
The whole reason that Hamidou went to Kentucky isn't necessarily because he liked Coach Calipari better than Coach Ollie. Which, I mean, I understand that Calipari can definitely develop him into a better NBA player than Ollie would. There's no question there. So I think he made the right decision. Like, if I was in his shoes, I would have done the same thing. But it really just hurts, honestly. I'm just disappointed because we were so close to having such a key player.
Yeah, that would have been UConn's biggest recruit since, what, Rudy Gay probably? I don't even know.
And, like, right now we don't have any...
Andre Drummond, not Rudy Gay, sorry.
We don't have any shooters right now.
No,
we're relying on Vance Jackson, although he's coming to his own a little bit the last few games.
He's been fantastic these last few games.
But Purvis has been garbage. He can't shoot.
No surprise there.
Still can't shoot. Streaky as hell. And other than that, who do we have? Well, we don't have anybody. Jalen might be able to, you know, his key game is like the mid-range jumper. Yeah, that's his shot.
Jalen hesitates a lot to shoot open threes. Like, if you watch him in a game, he'll always, I don't know if he wants to use the dribble for rhythm or he doesn't just trust his range, whatever. I don't know. I'm not in his head. But
I mean, I don't think it's the range issue considering, you know, the shot he hit last year. But,
I don't know about that. But he maybe uses the dribble just to get in rhythm. But anyway, he's not really what I call a competent three-point shooter. But talking about Hamidou, honestly, in my mind, the thing is, and the reason is why he didn't commit to UConn is Rodney Purvis. Because supposedly he's on an 18-month plan where he's going to not play this season, probably redshirt, practice, workout, and then come back in next season and play with this number one ranked recruiting class, is Quade Green and PJ Washington, Nick Richards, all of those guys. But I think the reason why Rodney Purvis had a lot to do with it, because if you look at him in his redshirt year and then going into his redshirt sophomore year, he got a lot worse. He didn't develop. His shot was still inconsistent. And coming out of high school and even his freshman year at NC State, he had a lot of commonalities with Hamidou Diallo in that he's just a physically gifted shooting guard, but he didn't really have the ball handling or shooting touch, basketball IQ, anything like that to make it on the NBA level or make noise in college basketball. And seeing firsthand how Rodney Purvis's growth was almost stagnated once he came to UConn, I think kind of scared him away a little bit. Another thing to your point, Kyle, what you said about UConn not being that great this season, I feel like there would have been a lot of pressure on him to come in and change the program, but I think he knows, and we all know, he's not ready to do that right now. Whether he's at UConn, Kentucky, it doesn't matter. He's just not ready yet. He's not there yet. So I think it was a long-term decision he was making, which is why he picked Kentucky, because UConn player development is suspect, and the 2018 draft isn't nearly as strong as the 2017 draft or this year's draft. So I think he's just trying to maximize his stock by getting all he can out of the player development at Kentucky. And if you look at somebody like Isaiah Briscoe, like, I always thought he was overrated, but this year he's playing and shooting the ball way better than he was at the same time last year. And I think that had a lot to do with Hamidou's decision too, because Calipari has proven that he can help people in a year or two of development. Same thing with the Harrison twins. They looked a lot better in their sophomore seasons than somebody like Rodney Purvis, who's been in the program forever at this point, and he's probably going to go end up overseas in a country I've never even heard of playing for whatever. But the point is, UConn is not really capable of developing and putting out shooting guards. And Rodney Purvis is kind of proof of that. Jeremy Lamb is the exception, not the rule. But UConn's player development is not that good. And I think that's what scared Hamidou at the end of the day, honestly. And it's concerning moving forward just because these kids are trying to go to the league and they know they're not ready for the league yet. They want to go somewhere that they can get better in. I don't know if Storrs, Connecticut is going to be that place as long as Kevin Ollie is the coach.
Do you also attribute that to the reason why a lot of players are leaving before they should from UConn? Like, look at Hamilton. He left way too early, in my opinion.
Daniel Hamilton is another good example of that. Like, he's a good example of not developing as a player. His freshman year, sophomore year, he was the same player, the same exact type of player that he was. His shot hadn't gotten any better. It's still flat. His decision-making was still questionable. His mechanics on his shot still weren't very good. And I think Hamidou Diallo, even though he made kind of, not necessarily a rush decision, but a quick decision that he's like, okay, I want to go to college now. It's December 1st. I'm going to enroll in a month. So I think that was another thing that you could look at just recently in the trend of UConn wing players. They haven't gotten any better. I think Vance Jackson will be a little different just because as a player, he's different where his skills are pretty much there for the most part. He's just more with him, it's more the physical in terms of getting faster and stronger and things like that. But from a skill standpoint, he's already there. He could shoot. He has decent handle. He stands up too tall, though. But for the most part, he's there. So I think he'll be better in a few more years than most UConn wing prospects at the same stage.
But he's already shown. I mean, yeah, I feel like it's just like, you know, himself. I don't attribute it to his success to anybody but himself. But yeah, he's definitely shown that he's been
better. He has skills that you can develop. And like you don't have to rely on a player development staff to do. Just like I said with him, he needs to get more athletic. And then even somebody like Jalen Hick. Yeah, Jalen's having a great year statistically just because his usage rate is so high. But if you look at him, he's still the same exact player he was last year. Like, he still doesn't necessarily break you down off the dribble. He goes by you in straight lines. He still can't go left. He still doesn't want to shoot the three. And like these guys, they have this new millions of dollars facility right across the street from the co-op right there on Fairfield Way. And like these, what are these guys doing? Like, are they not in the gym? I don't know.
They're not in the gym. We see what they're doing.
Yeah.
Follow He Fantastic on Snapchat and see what he's doing.
They're not in the gym, but that's my point. It's like, if UConn wants to change their program, you have to start investing in these young players. And like, it's not about the one and dones. It's about the guys who you can take and make to a player. Like, that's why I think guys like Tony Bennett and John Beilein at Michigan are some of the best coaches in college basketball. Mike Bray is another one because you look at guys that they keep in their program, how much they improve year to year. Like Matt Farrell right now is playing out of his mind Notre Dame. Same thing with Steve Asturia. And these guys have been in their program and the same coach for 3 to 4 years. And they're starting to reap the fruits of their labor now because they're having great seasons and they've gotten to where they need to be as players. But you can't say the same thing for somebody at UConn. Like even Amita Brima. Like where has he improved over the last 3 to 4 years? Nowhere. And at the end of the day, that comes down to the school and the program. Just they're not developing players properly. But
there is an exception to that I want to point out, and I think that's Kenton Facey.
Yeah, Facey's been playing very well, but I don't know. Maybe there's an exception to every rule, but I think UConn's been a trend that if you come to stores, you won't get better necessarily. But I don't want to talk about that anymore. You got anything else you want to say, Kyle?
No, I'm depressed enough. I think we should just end it.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. One thing, anybody who's listening, today is January 27th. It's Friday. Migos just dropped a new album called Culture is Fire. Make sure you check it out on Apple Music, whatever you use. But thanks for listening to our podcast. We've been back. We had a few weeks off, but we're back at it now. We'll be back next week with some more heat. But until then, we'll see you.
See ya.